Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected talk, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
I said break the record. I don't want it. Did you hear me? Now let's have a different one on the Savage Nation. How about Over the Mountain and Across the Sea by Johnny and Joe? Let's open with some doo-wop, because I've got some heavy news, but no one's ready for it. Everyone's on vacation. The children are off from school. They're not in the mood. Break the record. No, don't want it either. Not in the mood for music. Not in the mood for any of this. The world is blowing up in front of our eyes, and I'm supposed to put on an entertainment for you today. What if I'm not in the mood? What if I'm just not in the mood to entertain you? What if I'm just not in the mood to be the most exciting radio show in American history? What if I'm just not in the mood to do it anymore? What if I just want to get right down to it? Now, if you missed my Friday show, you saw where I went with my genetics for prophecy. And it was really one of the best pieces I've ever done in my life. If I have to say so myself, because no one else is going to say it. And it was missed by most people in the media because they're not, I'm not in their cartel. Let's put it to you that way. I'm not complaining. God's been good to me. I'm doing well. But the headline was, it's already been dropped from the newsletter from the Savage. Now, look, here it is. Savage Audio. Only a militant Judaism and Christianity can survive the 21st century. Would you please raise your hand in the Savage audience if you heard that on Friday? You're going to get extra credits on your final exam. If you heard this on Friday, would you please raise your hand? Only a militant Judaism and Christianity can survive the 21st century. I see by the sea of hands that there are no sea of hands. I see no one heard it on Friday. Where was everybody? Well, let's go to some of the news. Museum exhibits evidence of Japanese vivisection of U.S. POWs during World War II by the Japanese. They captured our flyboys, and while they were alive, they cut out their organs, performing vivisection on them while they were alive. While they were alive. So you say, well, look, that was a long time ago. What are you bringing that up for? I'm not bringing it up. It's in a Japanese museum. Some of them are so ashamed of what they did to our boys when they captured them that they created a museum of horrors. Then there was the Bataan Death March, which, of course, you know, karma's a you-know-what. That's why they got the two atomic bombs, because they deserved it. So the next time you hear, oh, we were evil, we dropped atomic bombs on Japan, they got what they deserved, just as ISIS is going to get what they deserved. Let them create a nice state in Syria and Iraq. Go ahead, I hope they do. Let them create a nice Islamic state of Iraq and Syria, and let's do to them what Truman did to the Japanese. Stop with the negotiating already. You don't negotiate it with throat cutters. What am... Okay, I can't do that. Can't do that one. Most of you are so stupid, it's frightening, the people I met over the weekend. People who I thought were smart because they had money are idiots. There's a guy in the suit business, made a fortune. I never thought he was this dumb. I went to a Seder on Friday night, and on Sunday I went to an Italian meal in North Beach at Pinocchio. I like the Pinocchio Italian meal better. I'd rather talk in an Italian restaurant. I had nightmares after the Seder. I felt like I was trapped in a New York subway car in August. I said only Orthodox Jews can recreate a New York subway car in August, which is no air conditioning, 400 people in a small room, no air conditioning, no food, and no exit. I had nightmares all night long from that one. I'm through with religion. End of story. Over. No more. I'm sorry. No more. I don't want it anymore. No more. Take the unleavened bread, please. I enjoy a bagel or a pizza myself. A matzah isn't so bad once a year, to be honest with you. But the story that there were slaves in Egypt and they fled and God protected them and the sea parted. And come on. Mythology, mythology, mythology. What good is mythology if it gives people a false sense of, let us say, specialness? What good is mythology if Jewish boys are raised to believe that they don't have to lift a finger to protect themselves, but God's going to protect them because their mother put a blood on the doorpost? That's really helped the Jewish boys. Take a look at Woody Allen and Larry David. Take a look at what it led to. Thank God the Israelis were raised on something a little different. But there'd be no Israel whatsoever. and you think the world would be peaceful, go ask the Indians in India how peaceful the world would be. Or go ask the Catholics in the Philippines how peaceful the world would be if there was no Israel. Go look around the world at all the conflicts. Go ask the Africans how peaceful the world would be if there was no Israel. Wherever you look, it's Muslims killing people, including Muslims. They are at war, but you're not. No, you're not at war. You're going to make peace like your moronic, dumb president. I'm going to say this, and this guy made a fortune in some business. So he comes up to me and he says, isn't it wonderful that Obama did a deal with Iran and avoided war? I said, are you out of your stupid mind? Are you that dumb? He said, well, what do you mean? He saved the world from war. I said, you really are an idiot. And I walked away from him, and I just had some vodka, and I left early. I couldn't take it. I can't be around stupid people. It lowers my intelligence. Do you have any idea what's actually in the agreement? Do you have any idea what Obama signed? Do you have any idea what the Iranians signed? It's two different agreements. Obama doesn't read any language other than English. That's if he's very good at English. Let's give him that. But there's two separate agreements. Two distinctly separate agreements. One signed by the psychotic throwbacks in Iran, and one signed by doofus in the White House and his band of merry pranksters, who either are stoned on LSD. It's either the remnants of LSD, magic mushrooms, or antidepressants. Did you actually see what's in it? Do you want to hear what's in it? If you look at what's in it from the point of view of reading what's in it, you'll find out that they agreed to nothing, and this wonderful president of yours agreed to everything. I'm not going to bother reading it to you. You can find it if you're really bothered. But the fact is, it has as much validity as the Rolling Stone rape accusations. The deal that Obama is trumpeting has as much validity as the Rolling Stone rape accusations. The deal that Obama is trumpeting with Iran has as much validity as attacking the pizza shop owner for being a bigot. It has no validity whatsoever. We have an imposter in the White House who was put there on false pretenses, faked it from the day he got into college, faked it. And that's leading me right into the lead story of today. It says, Mindy Kaling's brother pretended to be black to get into medical school. I don't know who Mindy Kaling is. Apparently she's an actress. But it says, the big brother of Fox sitcom star Mindy Kaling, they're Indian, East Indian, reveals that he got into medical school by pretending to be African American. 15 years ago, Vijay Chakalingam shaved off his straight black hair, trimmed what he calls his long Indian eyelashes, and started checking off the black box for race on his med school applications. Before long, the Asian Indian American was interviewing at Harvard and Columbia and found himself on wait lists at the University of Pennsylvania, Washington U, and Mount Sinai, despite his relatively mediocre 3.1 GPA and his family's considerable wealth. Are you listening to this? Are you listening carefully? Are you listening carefully to what affirmative action has wrought in this nation? Because I'm leading up to a major league point here. So here is an East Indian who started to change his association from Asian, or Asian, East Asian, to black. And the minute he said he was black and started checking off black, with the very same GPA, the very same GPA, and the very same wealthy family, they ran after him. Ran after him, the schmucks who run the universities. Ran after him. Oh, we need you because you're African American. We don't need any more of those nasty Asian Indian Americans. So they ran after him. And here's what he says. He said, he plans to write a memoir about his experiences to be entitled Almost Black. He said, I got into medical school because I said I was black, Chokalingam writes in his blog at almostblack.com. Quote, the funny thing is I'm not. My plan actually worked. Lucky for you, he said, I never became a doctor. How do you like that? I mean, those are harsh words. A man who pretended to be black to get into medical school. He shaved off his straight black hair and his mustache. Chokalingam said he came up with the idea of self-identifying as black after seeing fellow Asian Indian Americans with better grades than he had to struggle to get into medical school. He says, I disclosed that I grew up in one of the wealthiest towns in Massachusetts, that my mother was a doctor, and that my father was an architect, describing his med school applications. I disclosed that I didn't receive financial aid from the University of Chicago, and that I had a nice car. I was the campus rich kid. Let's just put it on the table. and yet the medical schools considered me an affirmative action applicant. On affirmative action in general, Chokel Ingham said, racism is not the answer. It also promotes negative stereotypes about the competency of minority Americans by making it seem like they need special treatment. Would anyone listening to this show argue with me that Obama was not advanced because of affirmative action? Is there anyone listening to this show who could definitively prove to me that he was advanced because of his great intellect and his great mentality? You know it's a lie. You've never seen his records, have you? No one's ever seen his college records. And you know he was handpicked and shuffled along and pushed forward. You know that, don't you? And take a look at what this man is doing to the world. Take a look at what he's done to the world. So medical school is one thing, but now you have a man pushed along way out of his league who's pretending to be president, and everything he touches blows up in front of our faces. That's all. 855-407-282. That's the opening gambit. Vivisection of American prisoners by the Japanese for the bleeding heart liberals who said that Truman shouldn't have dropped the bombs. There's a lot more. I could do the normal stuff, the run-of-the-mill, the Rolling Stone rape article. But anyone who ever believed Rolling Stone to begin with, I mean, what can I say to you? You believe anything that Jan Wenner ever published? Since when did they become a valid publication? I don't understand it. Tell me when. How many other men's lives have been ruined by false rape accusations? First of all, the reporter should go to prison. That's number one. I read that the Rolling Stoner is being sued by the fraternity, and I hope they take him for everything he's worth. Every beach house, every pair of shoes. They take that magazine for everything it's worth, for what they did to people. They didn't even file the you-know-what who published the false articles, Rolling Stone. But false rape accusations are very common, as you well know. They're a serious problem, as you well know. And as you well know, men's lives have been ruined by false rape accusations, as you well know. Doesn't matter, Rolling Stone retracted UVA rape story. It's a little too late for that. Lives have been ruined. Fraternities have been ruined. And the cowards who run the colleges should be fired for what they've done to these campuses. 855-407-282. There's a lot of other stuff I haven't gotten to yet. And here's another one. I don't know if I want to get into this one. Special ops troops doubt women can do the job. What, carry an 80-pound pack up a mountain and fall down a mountain, rip their bodies open and get up and fight the enemy? You think? You think it just doesn't take a tough man? No, anyone can do it. Take a look at anyone can be president, so why can't anyone? See, if anyone can be president, as Obama has proven, he's proven it. He's proven anyone can be president. So therefore, the same mentality says that anyone could be a special ops troop. Same mentality. The military has been so debased right now that even the cowardly generals who've kept their mouths shut for fear of losing their jobs, like all the other generals who've been purged, are saying we can hardly fight one war now because of what's been done to the military. You don't know this. The military has been so gutted by this administration that the general, and by the way, where's the Joint Chiefs of Staff? Martin Delaney, what's his name? Delaney? Dempsey. Remember Dempsey was quiet for a long while, then he started to speak out. Where'd Dempsey go? Did they dump him? They pushed him in a back room somewhere and put some unqualified person ahead of him. Now where is he? He's not speaking out on what's going on. But it's frightening to look at this and to see it happening. You know, back when I started in radio, 1994, I was roundly criticized by the local newspapers for saying that under liberalism, America is going to become more and more like Portugal. That we won't disappear, but we will be diminished like Portugal and just retreat into some distant status. Was I wrong? Oh my God, it's 20 minutes after the hour. I have to take a break, so I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. I got a two-track mind tonight. Turn it off. I don't know. I don't have any. There's no music to go with today's show. There's just news. That's all. Iran's statement on nuke deal opposite of Obama's. You see, in the language in which the mullahs, the deceitful, hateful mullahs speak, there's a different statement than what the president claims they agreed to. The official Iranian statement is in Persian. It's 512 words long. The French text is 203 words long. Liar Kerry's text comes in at 1,318 words. But as Greg Richter in Newsmax says, their lengths aren't the only differences. A man who actually reads the language, Amir Tahiri in the New York Post, says that the texts are vague enough to be ultimately meaningless, even as spin. That's your president's text and Kerry's. While the Persian text sounds as though nothing has been agreed to, or that Iran has made any concessions whatsoever. Iran's version, all you intelligent billionaires out there, is also labeled a press statement only, while the American version claims that the key points have been decided and agreed to. Can you believe this? The Iranian version uses tricks in verb tense, Tahiri said. Did you know the mullahs speak Persian? When speaking of things Iran is supposed to do, the tense nakara is used. That's a tense. That's something rap stars never learned in school. They speak in one tense, the present. As an example, quote, the nuclear facilities at Fordo shall be developed into a center for nuclear research and advanced physics. Shall I go on? I have to read this to you? I have to spoon feed it to you? In other words, it's a crock of garbage. And the only ones who agree with it are liberals. Iran's Persian statement on the deal contradicts Obama's claims. It's not only in their length that the texts differ, they amount to different, contradictory narratives. That's what you get. It proves to one thing, anyone can be president. Obama proves that for sure. Anyone can be president.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
Very nice. Okay, we finished that. Now let's go back to reality. It's suddenly not 1956 in Queens in a finished basement with your father's rye. The world has changed. The timeless truth is facing us. There are people who would like to kill you. They are at war with you. They hate you. They want to blow up your church. They want to rape your daughter. They want to cut your throat. And they're doing it all over the Middle East and Africa. And they're in every state of the land because of your president's open-door policy and the weakness of our intelligence agencies and the infiltration of our intelligence agencies. And we're sitting here like suddenly it's 1965. Suddenly the Finns are in. Well, let me tell you something. You're going to need more than Finns if this keeps up. He gave Iran the bomb. And in people who are, you would think are intelligent think that he saved the world. His ratings went up over the weekend. Signs a fake deal with Iran. In Persian, it says one thing. In English, it says another. And 50% of the American people, their ratings went up already. The morons. It just shows you the danger we're in. Iran's Persian statement on deal contradicts Obama's claims. Amir Tahiri, New York Post. He speaks the lingo. See, everything is about language. Kerry is a liar, a known liar. Kerry's been a liar from the day he appeared on the political scene with the medal over the wall. Mr. Swiftboat. He gave us a swiftboating with the Iran deal. He swiftboated America. The American statement claims that Iran has agreed not to use advanced centrifuges, each of which could do the work of 10 old ones. The Iranian text in the Iranian language insists that, quote, on the basis of solutions found, work on advanced centrifuges shall continue on the basis of a 10-year plan. You hear this? I can go down the list. Everything is language. I was having dinner yesterday, last night, after a long, slow Sunday. I told you at my friend's restaurant, Pinocchio, in North Beach, with Giovanni and my friend MK, and Teddy, by the way. Teddy got served first. Chicken, no salt, no pepper. I'm his food taster. And I always eat it before he gets it to make sure it's good and safe. Of course, I always get the food first because of the dog. Everyone likes the dog more than me. I don't blame them. But the fact of the matter is, Giovanni speaks many languages. He's not an educated guy. He speaks Spanish to his employees. He speaks Italian to people who come to speak Italian. He speaks Sicilian to those who speak Sicilian. So I asked him something about language. He said there are two different Sicilian dialects. There's Old Sicilian, and then there's Modern Sicilian. I said, I didn't know that. I said, what about the language used in The Godfather? He said, that's modern Sicilian. He said, there was an interview with Coppola. I'm getting back to the Persian deal. There's an interview with Coppola where when they were discussing which dialect of Sicilian to use with Michael Corleone, he said they have to use the modern Sicilian because he was born in America. He doesn't know the old Sicilian language. I said, that's amazing. I said, say two things to me, old Sicilian and modern Sicilian. It's so different in tone, right? So everything is about language. What is it? Obama doesn't know that in Persian there are different tenses that have different meanings than that signed by him and his Girl Scouts? What is he, that dumb or what? Or is he just throwing it away? I mean, you got to ask yourself. That's all. Iran's Persian statement on deal contradicts Obama's claims. But trying to tell this to I hate to use the word liberals. They're not liberals. They're dummies. It proves the adage that you can make a lot of money and be a moron. If it's anything I've learned in my life after Mayor Bloomberg, it's that you can make billions and be an idiot. That's the one thing I've learned. You can make billions and be a big dummy with the sodas. That was his big problem, is a soda. That was his biggest problem in the world, the size of the soda you were drinking. Okay, next case. Did you get it? So, in other words, Obama and Kerry and his Girl Scouts sold the people a bill of goods in his Thursday Rose Garden ceremony marking the Iran deal. Lied about everything. The Iranians said another thing in their own language. That's all. I made the point. So now it's a wait-and-see situation. Then Feinstein over the weekend backs the mullahs and attacks Israel. The most dangerous senator in American history. The most duplicitous senator in American history. I would say the most corrupt, but I've only read that in newspapers, and no one seems to be able to nail her for it. They always say about her husband, Blum, and he's made deals based upon her feeding contracts, and she's been enriched while she's in office. I can't confirm any of that, of course. That's mere allegations. Why should we assume that Dianne Feinstein would be so low as to do things like that, or that she's enriched herself while in office? How could you say that? Just because her wealth has gone up about 100 times since she became senator. Well, it's gone up with inflation. It's like COLA, like a cost of living raise. Instead of 1% a year, 1.6% a year over the time she was senator, it's about 1.6% a day, roughly, since she became senator. And Boxer, too, another great liberal. Take a look at what she was worth when she started and what her and hubby Sue are now worth. See how that happened? Nothing to do with her office, of course. These women are so in it for the public service and the public good. That's the main thing. Affirmative action gave us Obama. So the big brother of Fox sitcom star Mindy Kaling reveals that he got into medical school by pretending to be African American. He shaved off his black hair, trimmed what he calls his long Indian eyelashes, and started checking off the black box for race in his med school application. It's from the New York Post. They didn't make it up. And he said, I got into medical school because I said I was black. The funny thing is I'm not. My plan actually worked. And he said, lucky for you, I never became a doctor. I mean, I rest my case. Racism, he says, is not the answer. It promotes negative stereotypes about the competency of minority Americans by making it seem like they need special treatment. I rest my case. That's all. Now, what does that have to do with the current state of affairs? Everything. I rest my case. That's all. There's nothing more to be said. I said it all already today. You can go home now. Go on your Easter egg hunt, which is over. That came and went fast. What's next? What's to look forward to already? Easter's over. The kids are out of school. They're on vacation. I saw a terrible story about a vacation. Did you see this one? A couple, middle-class white couple, takes their sons to an expensive resort in the U.S. Virgin Islands. They rent a villa, $500,000 a night. In the Virgin Islands, and the boys are now in a coma in a hospital from pesticide exposure. Did you hear this story? Those of you who scoff at it, you know, the idiots out there. Well, I eat hamburgers and fries every day. I smoke cigars. And I love them pesticides. Well, you're a born Republican. You're perfect. You're the stereotype of the born blowhard. Pesticides kill. In fact, it's like sarin gas. The pesticide that was used, which is banned by the EPA, incidentally, was apparently used under the rented villa in St. John. They sprayed the room underneath them, the fumes seeped up, and the boys went into a coma. The boys were found unconscious. The boys and their mother were having seizures. You hear this? An EPA spokesman, Elias Rodriguez, says the tests show that there was a presence of methyl bromide in the unit where the family was staying. Methyl bromide is very similar in its actions on the central nervous system to sarin gas. Did you hear this? So apparently they use this, and the boys now are brain damaged as a result of this. It just shows you the danger we're in. And ever since I've been very, since the kids were young, they're grown now, they're adults, I was a fanatic. People laughed at me. And many of you laugh at me today, but you don't know how far ahead of the curve I've always been. Do you know that in 1974 I wrote a best-selling children's book that won the Science Teachers Association Prize for the best science book of the year, long before I was in radio, and it was entitled Bugs in the Peanut Butter. And many people laughed at me. What are you talking about? I mean, bugs in the peanut butter. It was published by Little Brown. It was all about the dangers of toxins and pesticides and additives in foods that our children are eating. And it won a prize in its time. It was 1974. So you do the math. Let's see. Even liberals, 84, 94, 04. It's 40 years ago. You were warning America. I wouldn't let them put new rugs in my house. It was always hardwood and like a rolled out carpet, because I knew that the pesticides that they use in new carpets would kill children, or let's say wouldn't kill them outright, probably induce illness, at the very least allergies in pets and children. Sprays never used in my house, never. I see mothers running around, Lysol, everything they spray, Lysol killing. Are they crazy? How about those things you hang in your car? Toxic poisons. Toxic poisons are giving us scent. See, those are molecules you're smelling. The fake molecules that imitate a flower you're inhaling. If you can smell it, it means you've inhaled it, right? So you're killing yourself with all of these scents and sprays. What does that have to do with anything? I don't know. It's just random. Random conversation about the world we live in. That's what it is. Random conversation about the world we live in. From the ridiculous to the ridiculous. From the very real dangers of a president who was never made to be president, who was pushed ahead based on qualities other than his brains and his accomplishments. Exactly. Write it down. Send it on to Media Matters. Write that exact word, those exact words. Now make sure you quote me properly. From a president pushed ahead based on qualities other than his brains to the toxins in our environment, whether it be foodborne, waterborne, airborne. Here's these kids, these poor kids. I remember I ran four years ago, my son took a vacation in Mexico. I forget the city. I don't remember. I don't like Mexico. I don't like going there to begin with. It was never like my goal. I was not one of those Americans who always wanted to live in Mexico. I never liked it. But we went, I don't know where, I forget, somewhere in the Caribbean, on an island. I don't know. It's like in a curve in the area near Panama. Who knows? Cancun Resort. So he knows I'm like a picky traveler. Dad, we got you the corner room on the top with the wind coming this way, that way, blowing through it. This, no pesticides. We told the owner of the hotel, no pesticides, no sprays. Because I'm advanced. You go into a hotel, they can't spray the room. If I walk in, I smell a perfume, I move already. We get there. There was no spray. All right, not bad. The room was beautiful. I figured I'd leave everyone alone. I wouldn't complain for a minute. I'd leave everyone alone. They all went to their rooms. It was a party of 10 or 12 of us. Nice family vacation. I pulled the bed cover back. There was blood all over the mattress. Something in me, I'm not making it up, ask the family. I pulled back the bed cover and the sheet. It's covered with blood, dried blood. That was it. I mean, I called you. Are you insane? I said, throw the mattress out of this. What is it? Did someone get shot in the bed? What? Was there a delivery? A birth in the bed? What is this? I mean, this is an example. That's all. I really love to travel. I just love it. You don't know what you're going to get under the bed cover, on the bed cover, under the bed cover. So now you go to this. These poor people go to this $1,000 a night resort in the Virgin Islands that they've been going to for years. And some sub-moron in the pesticide company used methyl bromide, and now the boys are brain damaged. And it wasn't even used in their room. It was used under them. It seeped up through the floor. Can you believe this? The use of the pesticide is restricted in the United States. So that's the story. Depending on the season, the luxury villa where their family stayed rents between $550 and $1,200 a night. Seaglass Vacations, which acts as a rental agent for units, said the unit directly below the one where the family stayed was recently treated for pests, but the unit was not treated. The company said it licensed an outside company, Terminix. Ryan, did you hear? For the pest control services. God. The U.S. Department of Justice has initiated a criminal investigation into the matter. Why the U.S. Department of Justice? What do they have to do with this? That's like an EPA thing. What does the Justice Department have to do with this? Is to stick his nose into that, too? All right, let's clean up the calls and get some current ones. Phone number is 855-1072. I take the weak calls off, put the strong calls on. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-COIN. You know, a guy who fakes it as a president or anything else is like a guy with a toupee. The same thing. I saw a guy the other day at that Seder. I had to run away from him. He had a nest in his head. It looked like bugs were crawling out of it. But if he looked at himself in the mirror, would he see a nest on his head? Like a nest. It looked like robins were laying eggs in it. He thought he was a handsome devil. Because no one says, the nest on your head, you know what I mean? Lose it. You're better off. Lose the nest, Murray. Just lose it already. There's a couple of bugs coming out of the back. But it's the same thing with the president. It's like, how do you think you're getting away with this? You saved the world with the Iran deal? Why? The Iranians didn't say so. Ah, forget about it. What's the difference? It's funny to talk about a guy's wig. I get it. Affirmative action. That's another funny story. Pesticides kill people. That's a funny story. Iran's Persian statement on the deal contradicts Obama's claims. That's another funny story. Comment on the Rolling Stone rape article. That's another funny story. Rasmussen poll majority continues to reject Obama amnesty plan. That's another funny story. If most of us reject amnesty for the illegal aliens who are running over us like locusts, most of us do, by the way, how come this man thinks he can get away with it? Answer, because the Republicans and him are one with regard to amnesty. They're the same. That's why they're running the fraud, Jeb Bush. That's where they're running the next fraud, Jeb Bush, Mr. Amnesty. Hollywood gala raises record $33 million for Israel Defense Forces. This is an interesting article. How could these liberals like Barbara Streisand, I don't get it. How could they raise money for the Israel Defense Force? Barbara Streisand, Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Pamela Anderson, what is she sticking a nose in there? Were among the 1,200 guests who attended the annual Friends of the Israel Defense Forces event. I'm glad they did it. All these A-listers came out to raise money for the Israeli Defense Force. Larry Ellison, $10 million from Oracle co-founder Larry Ellison. $5 million from philanthropist Sheldon and Miriam Adelson, no friends of Obama. $5.2 million from Maurice and Paul Marciano of Guess Jeans. $3.6 million from Cheryl and Chaim Sabin. $2 million from the New York Giants president Steve Tisch. That's good. That's a good thing. But the thing is, despite that, they support Obama and his attacks on Israel. Go figure this out. How did the same people who support the IDF attack Israel?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
If, in fact, we can resolve these issues diplomatically, we are more likely to be safe, more likely to be secured, in a better position to protect our allies. And who knows? Iran may change. If it doesn't, our deterrence capabilities, our military superiority stays in place.
What military superiority? He destroyed our military superiority. He's gutted our military. Did you know that he's gutted the military? Do you know he's fired many of our top combat leaders, replaced them with incompetent affirmative action appointees? Did you know that? Ask those in the military if I'm making it up. Anyway, look, the fact of the matter is his ratings went up. If you believe, you know, the poll, who owns the polls? The CIA may own the polls, or the NSA can own it for all I know. What do I know? Robocalls. You know, I've never been called on a poll, and I wouldn't answer anyway. I've never felt that they were valid. But he went up to 50% after he saved the world with the Iran deal. Didn't save anything. The Iranian statement in Persian contradicts what Obama said it says. So we have a big problem on our hands with a terror nation getting a bomb, setting off a nuclear arms race. And there's nothing we can do about it. I mean, there's nothing we can do about it. So, you know, there's a talk about it. So talk about other things. So I say over the weekend, Hollywood Gala raises record $33 million for the Israeli Defense Forces. And it includes really crazed liberals like Barbara Streisand. And I don't understand this. These are the people who spit on our military, spit on our police, spit on guns, and they go there and give money to the Israel Defense Forces. These are the same people who hate Zionism and hate Netanyahu and back the big guy in the White House in his condemnation of Israel. And yet they attend the annual Friends of the Israeli Defense Force, and they raise all this money for them. Now, the fact is that the IDF fund here, I think it's overfunded. Why don't they do what I've done, which is try to help American troops who come back injured from our war? Why don't they give a little money to the guys who lost arms and legs or the widows thereof in Iraq or Afghanistan? Maybe that would be nice if Barbara Streisand could do that, along with the other great guests. Some of them are a little conservative, but most of them are not. They're whack job leftists. I mean, Sherrilyn Hyam Sabin ran fundraisers for Obama. He's Israeli. Made a fortune in the, I forget, the toy business of some kind. He licensed something to Sony, made billions of dollars, and now he spends all of his money supporting far-left causes. So they raise money for the Israel Defense Forces, which is fine, but why don't they raise money for the U.S. military instead of for the IDF? I mean, this is the pregnant question. You can't call on this. I'm saying what needs to be said. That's all. And then we talked about how affirmative action gave us Obama, and it was exemplified by a story of the big brother of a sitcom star who was of East Indian extraction. He was rejected by medical schools as an East Indian, and he reapplied by shaving his straight black hair, trimmed what he calls his long Indian eyelashes, and started checking off the black box for race on his med school applications. And before long, lo and behold, presto, the Asian Indian American was accepted at the major American universities with a pretty bad GPA. It was the same GPA he had when he was an Indian, 3.1, which is mediocre, because most people apply to medical school at these schools have a 3.85 GPA. By the way, I had a 3.94 in graduate school, for those of you who like to put me down. Check it out. Oh, my academics are very good. I'm very proud of that. But that's a long time ago. I remember the age of worrying about GPA. I have a psychiatrist friend, a mature man, one of the top leaders in his field. Brilliant man. Brilliant man. Medical doctor, neuropsychiatrist, a leader in his field, who to this day has nightmares that he's back in school racing to an exam that he missed. And he can't take, he doesn't know if he can pass the exam. You know, test anxiety dreams go on for 30, 40 years. Did you know that, Jim? I used to get them until recently. I was still back at Queens College, which I graduated from in 1966, if you could believe it. And I used to have dreams until a few years ago. I was still an undergraduate. I was going to the college to take a test, and I couldn't find the classroom. And then when I got there, there was no paper, and there was no pencils, and I wasn't prepared, and I wasn't going to get the degree. I don't get them anymore. But I used to. Test anxiety is anomalous. You think Obama ever has any nightmares about the fact that everyone knows that he's a king without clothes, that they're looking right through him and laughing at him, like in Todd Browning's Freaks, laughing, laughing, laughing. I don't think so. I think he has no shame. That's the mark of a sociopath who has no shame. Someone who doesn't even care if you're laughing at them and can see right through them. I think that is the mark of a sociopath. But I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm only a talk show host, a mere talk show host. So let's listen to clip 21 of our great president in his interview with the esteemed New York Times in 21.
It has been personally difficult for me to hear the sort of expressions that somehow this administration has not done everything it could to look out for Israel's interests, and the suggestion that when we have very serious policy differences, that's not in the context of...
Get off it, serious. You're talking about it in an academic sense. You're dealing with a terrorist state. What do you mean? He sounds like a dumb professor sitting in a room there having a tofu sandwich. Sorry, they don't eat sandwiches anymore. That's got gluten in it. Could you imagine this?
Well, policy differences, blah, blah, blah.
Pompous, academic, distant, disconnected. Rubbish. The man's turned the world upside down and set it on fire. Okay, what can you do? If Israel can't defend themselves, I can't defend them from him. That's what I've come to. That's how I rest at night. I rest at night saying, if Israel itself cannot defend itself from this man, then what can I do about it? Huh? If he can start wars and get away with it and the liberals support him, what can I do about it? I mean, there's nothing I can do about it. That's all. There's nothing funny I can tell you right now. Nothing. Nothing funny. I'm giving you the news already. The Rolling Stone rape article, let someone else do that. Let someone else get righteously indignant about Jan Wenner's Rolling Stone. Excuse me. When did you ever take Rolling Stone magazine seriously? Would you look at it for the cure for cancer? Who would turn to Rolling Stone for anything that's serious? You expect truth from a magazine built on drugs, sex, and rock and roll? It was always an entertainment rag. All right, so they ruined people's lives and ruined fraternities and ruined the university's reputation. Let them lose everything in a court case, that's all. Next case. Rasmussen poll. Majority continues to reject Obama amnesty plan. They want him deported. Next case, move on. Nothing to see here. ISIS blows up church on Easter Sunday. Nah, what's the big deal? It's just a church. Isn't that what the left wants to do in America? Is blow up all the churches? Turn them into drunk tanks? I drive by the churches here in the north of San Francisco. There's no one goes to them, basically. And they're full on Tuesday nights and Thursday nights when they're drunk tanks. You can't get in the parking lots. I said, look. At first I thought people were going back to the churches. Look at that. Look at all those people hanging around smoking outside. Hey, nine young people, look at that, beards. I realized that they were forced into rehab. They have to go to these AA meetings in the churches. The churches have become social centers. That's all. Odierno says readiness at historically low levels. This is funny. This is Army Chief of Staff Ray Odierno is now warning us that the military has been so gutted that it's, you're not doing well. Now, he's one of the chief architects of everything liberal in the military. Ask people who served under, including Colonel Alan West, what he thinks of General Ray Odierno. He didn't have a word to say when they were cutting the military. Now he's suddenly screaming, oh, the alarm bells. Army says diversity training sent wrong signal. Army officials are investigating a diversity training briefing at Fort Gordon, Georgia, in which a slide about so-called white privilege was shown to soldiers. It was slipped in by one of the vermin. One item reads, race privilege gives whites little reason to pay a lot of attention to African Americans or to how white privilege affects them. That was given to our boys who have enlisted in the military. And we learned that the presentation was not authorized, nor was it part of the standard slides. And then fire the vermin who put it in there. Get rid of the rat. Get rid of the commie rat who put it in there. Here's another one. Verifying Iran nuclear deal not possible, experts say. I told you that already. Despite promises by President O'Leary that Iranian cheating on a new treaty will be detected, verifying Tehran's compliance with the future nuclear accord will be very difficult, if not impossible, arms experts say. That's a shock, isn't it, that Obama and Kerry lied to us about the deal? His ratings went up. That's all he wanted. He saved the world. The people who made money in the suit business think he's already a genius. I had a wig on it. The toupee on the guy's head. It was like a nest, like a robin's nest. I couldn't believe it. I mean, the wig was about as truthful as what he was saying about Obama. I felt like I was at a religious thing. I didn't want to say anything. I said, you know, the nest you have on your head, there's bugs crawling out of the back of it. You know, you ought to have it, rethink it. Have it sprayed. Have it sprayed once a season. But I didn't want to insult him. It was at a religious event. Crowded, horrible.
packed in a room, 300 people in an anteroom. No food, no air conditioning, no exit. I was looking up at the vents. I said, if any gas starts coming out of them, I'm going to break the window with an axe. Another joke amongst Jews. A few got it. They got the dark humor that I use. Who puts 300 people into an anteroom like this, promising them hors d'oeuvres? Jews without hors d'oeuvres, you know what that's like? It's unbelievable. An hour before a service. No hors d'oeuvres, just vodka and gin. And more people are showing up. And there's no way out of the place and no air conditioning. And I kept looking up at the vents to see if any kind of gas was coming out. Horrible, just a horrible experience. And that night I had nightmares all night long. I was imprisoned. It's a very interesting book that's coming out on this. Who wrote this? Well, Bernie Kerik. It's about our prison system and how rotten and corrupt it is. Rotten from the top to the bottom. Not so much the prisons, but the justice system is so rotted. I had a nightmare that I committed a minor infraction. I was put in jail overnight, and then I did another mistake in jail. And a big, mean, clipped-haired, mean-faced woman was in charge of the prison. And whatever I did, she kept adding to my sentence, and I couldn't get out. And I kept trying to call my lawyer, but he was on vacation. And no matter what I did, and the days were going by, you know how many people are in prison in this country who don't belong there? It starts with a minor infraction. The next thing you know, they're adding to it because the guy defended himself against being raped. If he fought against them, they give him a demerit, one of those wonderful, bingo, bango. The jails are full of people who are innocent. Not all of them, but don't get me wrong. Don't suddenly rush to judgment like the fatheads in the media. Oh, they belong there. I believe in justice. Smoke a cigar. I believe in justice. Anyway, that thing is, it's pretty bad. The justice system is broken in America. Everything's no good. It's horrible. It's not true. Come on, I don't want to be that negative. You don't see. Let's see. Let's be positive. Let's see. It was Easter Sunday. Everyone was happy. Easter egg rolls. Happy families. The president is looking out for America and Israel. The Hispanics are coming over the border are our next Einsteins. Every one of those little children who are illiterate in Spanish will in their lifetime contribute to the society equal to that of Albert Einstein. So think about Nancy Pelosi over the weekend. Remember last summer the stunt where she washed the dirty feet of illegal alien children? How disgusting that was? How cravenly disgusting? I hope I don't wake up one day and see her washing the blood off the hands of an ISIS member after he cut the throat of Christians. I really hope that doesn't appear in the newspaper. Anyway, just random thoughts. I'll be right back. I'm Michael Savage.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. All right, look, I have a big announcement to make. It's April, right? And I have a very, very big announcement. Many of you have bought my novels, Abuse of Power, A Time for War, the lead characters, Jack Hatfield. And you've been waiting for my last novel in the series, Countdown to Mecca, a thriller. St. Martin's Press, great publisher. It'll be out in about a month. I didn't know, I truly didn't know it. I just learned it a minute ago. I thought it was coming out way, way after that. I've been begging them to move it up. They said, Michael, it's coming out on the 12th of May. So at the end of the day, you're going to see the ad for it on my website. It's actually a small ad right now. There is one on the bottom right, Michael Savage Countdown to Mecca. But there's a couple of things in this book for the fans of Michael Savage's novel writing that I must point out that has never been done by me before. I have a cast of characters at the beginning of this novel. You know how they used to do that in 19th century Russian novels because there were so many characters? Remember that, Jim? You couldn't remember it, but we've become so illiterate in America, with or movies, there's only a few characters, so you don't need a list of the characters because there's so few of them. My novel has many characters, and I list them in the front of the book so we can flip back and forth and see who they are. Jack Hatfield, fearless San Francisco freelance journalist, defrocked former host of the cable TV program Truth Tellers. Doc Mattson, former soldier, current merc, trusted ally of Jack. He's actually a friend of mine. I fictionalized him in the book. Dover Griffith, one-time Department of Naval Intelligence analyst, now FBI agent, and Jack's lover girl. Sammy Michaels, Jack's younger half-brother, former Marine, now a professional clown. Saul Minsky, San Francisco-based gangster. Oh, did I love writing about Minsky. I put a Jewish gangster into the novel who's a good guy, works with the good guys in the book to save them. He's a great character. Boaz Simonson, Minsky's IT wizard. In the book is Rick, Minsky's driver and bodyguard. Carl Forsyth, remember him? FBI field director, San Francisco. Pyotr Ansky, Russian national assassin. Thomas Brooks, three-star general, U.S. Strategic Command. Montgomery Morton, one-star general, U.S. Strategic Command. Stephen Reynolds, captain, U.S. military. Anastasia Vincent, Russian-born hooker. Well, I call her an escort. Ritu, Indian-born escort. Miwa, Japanese-born escort. Daniel Jeffries, captain, SFPD. Helmut Schoenberg, CEO of German multinational corporation, Der Wahrheit Untenham. Bernie Peters, eccentric physicist based in San Francisco. He's a great character. They're all in Countdown to Mecca. It is actually the best of the series. It will be my last one. I'm not doing another one. I can't. There's only so much creativity in any bottle. This bottle's finished. That's all. Should have been a major motion picture by now, but they hate me in Hollywood because I don't go along with the program. And I'll read to you from the book over the coming days, and hopefully you'll be so enticed that you'll click on Countdown to Mecca, and you'll order a couple of copies, and you'll make it a bestseller again, and you'll understand that you have the power to change the course of publishing and the course of human events. From the New York Times bestselling author of Abuse of Power and Time for War, and radio host of The Savage Nation, comes a powerful new thriller, Countdown to Mecca. Look it up. It's on Amazon and many other sites. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be right back. Be here or be nowhere.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
So slow. Come on, Tony. Move it up a little bit. All right, turn it on. Okay, let's see if he doesn't get to San Francisco. I'm going to kill it. It's another age, all of this. Everything's like glue. I've been terribly alone. All right, turn it off. I don't have the patience. I'm not sitting in the Copa 1959, you know, so waiting for the next note, ordering another drink. It's like bad service in a restaurant to make you drink that extra glass of wine where they make most of their profit. They used to sing slower in those days to boost liquor sales. I think is that when the wigs came in and men, the toupee came in big in the 60s, right? When guys wanted to be young forever. That was before the plugs and the implants. They went into the straight into the nest. I wish they'd like fumigate him once a year or something. Should come with a fumigation policy. You know who could really use one is Governor Brown. I don't like wigs on men, but he could use one. That shine, that's too much head there. The drought now is like a monster from a bad horror movie. Telling me drought restraints. All right, so I cut back on the water running while I'm brushing my teeth. I do. I mean, I'm conscious of it. I'm glad I have a low flush toilet, but I have to use it double. Every time I use it, I have to flush it twice anyway. That really made sense. That hippie idea. Let's cut down the amount of water in the tank. Made sense, except you need to flush it twice every time you use it. I don't know about you, but everything makes no sense to me. All right, so I brush my teeth. I shut the water off in between the brushing. And what I try to cut back, shorter showers, it makes sense. When you look at the number of gallons, 40 gallons a shower, forget about it. So I want to talk about Michael Savage's Countdown to Mecca. I just learned a minute ago, it's coming out in about a month. And you can order it online right now. And I do want to push it up to number one on the lists, actually. The plot has got a lot of tricks in it. Michael Savage, Countdown to Mecca. And I can't give the plot away. It's very hard for me to do it. Let's put it to you this way. It's not a nuclear device that is going to go off and kill a lot of people. It's something else. So it's a unique, right? So I got all these new characters in there. And there's a lot of stuff based upon fiction, nonfiction, my experiences in life. Most of it's fictional, right? Some things are real, like a boat I once had and the dog Teddy is Eddie in the book. He's still in the book. And then a new character, Minsky, Saul Minsky, the Jewish gangster, doesn't exist. I fictionalized him. So I'm going to read you a chapter one. This is after the blow-up of the plane. I'm not going to give you the first chapter when Pyotr Ansky blows up a jet. That's a horrible scene. I don't even want to read it. It'll freak you out. San Francisco, California. Samuel Michaels was dozing on his comfortable threadbare sofa when he heard a key move in the door of his second floor Montgomery Street studio apartment. As his eyes opened, so did the door. A blonde, barefoot, platinum-eyed vision in a low-cut, form-fitting black micro-mini dress jumped in panting. His neighbor, Anastasia Vincent, and his half-brother, Jack, were the only ones who had a key. And this definitely wasn't Jack Hatfield. Jack hadn't been here in over a year, which was the last time they spoke. It was to thank him for a jazz CD Sammy had sent as a birthday present and peace offering. Sam, she gulped in a charming Russian accent. They're after me. Who is, Sammy asked. Very bad men, she said, shaking. Her eyes, normally alert as those of a Nordic wolf, seemed wary and frightened. I like that line. Jim, you like that? Don't you like women whose eyes are like a Nordic wolf? Her eyes, normally alert as those of a Nordic wolf, seemed very frightened. Sammy's Marine training was a little rusty. He hadn't worn a uniform for years, not since he was on one of his motorcycles, when a teen driver had hit him, sending him into a year of physical therapy and paving the way for a handsome settlement with insurance company. Still, as the saying goes, once a Marine, always a Marine. Sammy was up and moving past her in an instant. He slammed his apartment door shut behind her, rattling the painting he'd bought at a flea market, showing a shipwreck in the Farallon Islands out in the bay. Then he locked and bolted the door and turned toward her. It's okay, you're safe now. Her Arctic eyes locked on his. Are you sure? He wasn't, but he said absolutely no one would ever expect to find a beautiful girl in my apartment. She smiled half-heartedly. You are making a joke. I wish. Now relax and tell me what's going on, Sammy coaxed. She began to calm down. He maneuvered her to the sofa and sat next to her, looking intently into her eyes. It was easy. They were the brightest, lightest blue he had ever seen. But he kept one ear trained on the door on the steps outside. They were old wooden steps, and they creaked. It would be difficult for anyone to sneak up on him. Anastasia Vincent was a strong, very special girl. Within weeks of her moving here from Moscow, he had learned she was a high-class call girl. That was probably how she got into this country, paying her way with favors. But that didn't matter. If there was one thing he'd learned in his 37 years, people did what they had to do. Hell, he was a professional party clown. Not a party animal, but a bona fide party clown. Big red wig, big red nose, big red slippers, and lots of polka dots in between. Who was he to judge others? Anna had character, wisdom, and she had seen more in her 27 years than most men see in a lifetime. He figured she was on the lam from an angry John, someone he could handle. You want a drink, water, something stronger, he asked. She shook her head. No, thank you. No, thank you. Once Anna caught her breath, it all came out in a rush. I met a military officer 6 months ago at a party hosted by a wealthy armament manufacturer. He introduced himself as General Montgomery Morton. He seemed very taken by me. Sammy smiled. That doesn't exactly put General Montgomery Morton in a genius class for pickers. You are very sweet, she replied. Sammy was used to hearing that from women, which is why there weren't many of them trying to get in to see him. They wanted the younger, the studlier, the wealthier. Even in San Francisco, there were still enough straight guys like that to shrink the dating pool for guys like him to zero. So you met this general, Sammy said. Yeah, and soon he was calling me every week and paying very well, she said. We were always staying in the city's best hotels, ordering room service, expensive champagne. She smiled wryly. No gifts, though, nothing that could be traced. But that was all right. His money was good. The last time we met, he asked me to bring other women to party with his friends. That was today. He said it was a special occasion. Anyway, this is one of the scenes set in one of the hotels in San Francisco, and this call girl and her friends are entertaining these generals in a hotel, and they overhear something. And this overheard statement puts their lives in danger. And then the military sends out a hit squad to kill these women. And there's a chase scene, a couple of chase scenes across the Embarcadero that I'm extremely gratified with my writing. It's really amazing. The trolleys, the tracks, the sounds, the birds. I see it in a movie. It's going to be a great movie one day. I hope I see the movie. I really do. I envisioned this scene so many times. And for those of you who live in San Francisco, this is probably as descriptive a novel of San Francisco as you're ever going to find. And there's a lot more to the story in Countdown to Mecca. I'm only reading from an advanced reading copy. It's actually not in the stores. It's only on various websites such as BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com. I really would like you to go look it up and buy it. Obviously, I want you to buy it or I wouldn't be reading about it. And the reason is twofold. One, because I want a bestseller. Two, because I think the book is so important. It's not just a novel, Countdown to Mecca. It's actually quite a political statement within the novel. And it's the opposite of what you might think. It starts out one way and it ends up another way. And it's so relevant to what's going on today. It's about Iran, the bomb, the Hajj at Mecca. It's amazing to me what's going on in the world. With regard to when I conceived of this book, which was about 2 years ago, and where we are today, in the world. But you'll see, as time goes on, without giving the whole plot away, I'll read you some of the book on the Savage Nation. 855-400-7282. If you'd like me to continue reading from the book for a few minutes, will you give us a call? Because I don't know what you want me to do. It's your show. Or we can do the news, which I've been doing, which we should do as well. We have to go back now to the Faker-in-Chief, where he now attacks Republicans instead of attacking the Iranians. Your president, using the stooge, what's his name, Friedkin at the New York Times? I get them mixed up. Friedkin of the CDC and Tom Friedkin. Tom Friedkin of the CDC and Thomas Friedman of the New York Times are like twin cousins. They're like cousins from another mother in terms of their slavishness to this man. I never saw anything like this. So he goes to the NYT and he gives an interview about how great he is. That's all. 855-400-7282. Let's play one of his clips just for the heck of it. Any one of them we haven't played. Let's any one of us.
I do worry that some traditional boundaries in how we think about foreign policy have been crossed. I thought the letter that was sent to the Supreme Leader was inappropriate.
Stop. I want you to listen to this. The letter sent to the Supreme Leader. Now, who would refer to a dictator, a religious theocrat, a theocratic dictator? As a supreme leader, who would do that? Which president in the world, instead of saying the leader of Iran, why would he refer to him as the supreme leader unless he believed that? Do you understand how warped this president's mind is to call him the supreme leader? I don't care that he calls himself supreme leader. That would be like a president calling Mussolini El Duce instead of the leader of Italy. Why would you refer to him as El Duce unless you yourself thought of him as El Duce? Or if FDR referred to Hitler as the Führer, would he have ever said that? Would FDR ever have said the Führer? No, he would have said the leader of Germany. See? And then he says foreign policy that has been crossed, boundaries that have been crossed. You mean we hear about a Congress that's that doesn't function, a dysfunctional Congress. So now Congress functions and it's dysfunctional to him. It's unbelievable to me. How enslaved this man's mind is with his own rhetoric. All right. 855-407-282. Let's go on to some of the callers. Bruce on KBOI. KBOI. Boise, Idaho. What's on your mind, Bruce?
Yes, sir. I enjoy your book very much. When I was a kid, I lived 100 miles south of you, and we had John Steinbeck, and you're just a brilliant writer. I love the way
I love Steinbeck. I particularly loved, I can't pull it off my head right now. Travels with Charlie was a great one. Great book.
Yeah.
When he traveled with his dog, you know, that was a good one.
Yeah, but you're a brilliant guy. I love
And then Cannery Row was terrific. Of course, The Grapes of Wrath. Very descriptive. But you see, I know San Francisco probably as well as anybody in the city. I've lived there since 74, and I'm probably the most famous local San Francisco-based author. Now, the reason they don't refer to me in the city is because my politics don't match the degeneracy of the city. And so, therefore, I don't exist. But I do exist. I have a national radio show. I'm the only one who ever broke out of the local media. And I have a number of bestsellers based in San Francisco. You would think that they could put some of their twisted biases aside and say he's a local boy who made good. But no, they won't do it. Unless it's about boy meets boy or girl meets girl or boy and girl meet and blow up a church. It somehow doesn't make the cut in Nancy Pelosi's backyard. But would you like me to read a little bit more? How about Saul Minsky? Should I introduce him?
Sir, what
would you like to hear? I read you about the girl, Anastasia, with the Arctic wolf eyes.
Yeah.
Which I thought was good. I haven't seen that in literature, by the way. Can anyone listening to this show tell me of a female character who was described as having the eyes of an Arctic wolf? I don't know of it. Don't call me derivative. You call me anything you want, but don't call me derivative. I didn't copy that from anywhere. I don't work for the New York Times or the Rolling Stone magazine. So you'd like me to read a little bit more from Countdown to Mecca. Okay, Bruce, stay on the line. I'll read another page or two. I want to find the... are you ready for this one? Oh, this is about Jack Hatfield, your favorite character. And it's about how Jack Hatfield got thrown off TV. And I'll read you one paragraph. Not that all CEOs were liars. It was just that he had personally dealt with quite a few. Those who had appeared on his cable TV series, Truth Tellers, and those who had pressured the station to cancel his controversial show because of a hypothetical question when he said, quote, if it came down to it, would you rather see 100 million of us killed or kill 100 million Muslims if they had the bomb and threatened us? Jack lamented the fact that in the old days, the very old days, the time of the Continental Congress, one delegate, he forgot who, seconded the debate on independence because he felt it wasn't a topic so dangerous you couldn't at least talk about it. Now, if talk wasn't all about political correctness and spin, the mainstream media and CEO shunned it. So that's about Jack, how he got fired, where they twisted his words. Sound familiar to you? But I haven't gotten into the plot, and there's some interesting stuff with Teddy. And, here's stuff about the Quran. How about West Point, New York? That's a good one, where the generals get together in the plot called Countdown to Mecca. I mean, you military buffs are going to just love this. This whole story about military men plotting something. And these are top guys. These guys all come from third-generation military families. They're generals. They graduated West Point, Naval Academy, VMI. They're all highly educated men. They're not just a bunch of fools. And they make a decision. And they're in a room discussing the threat that radical Islam poses to the world. And I'll read it to you the minute I come back, right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN.
If you like fiction, and if you like fiction tied to politics, you can't beat Savage's Countdown to Mecca. Today is the kickoff day. I just learned an hour ago, 30 minutes ago, the book is coming out much sooner than I thought. So it's called Countdown to Mecca. Here's a scene on page 36 about a bunch of generals who meet at a skeet shooting range at West Point. And General Thomas Brooks is in a tweed jacket standing at the outdoor rifle table lined with Browning, Caesar Guarini, and Winchester shotguns. And I describe the soldiers. And the generals who he's called and the colonels say to him, well, what's this about? And he says, Firebird is fine if that's what concerns you. At once, the other three soldiers knew what this was about. I will cast terror into the hearts of those who disbelieve, Brooks quoted, as if Morton hadn't spoken. Therefore, strike off their heads and strike off every fingertip of them. Who said that? He looked into the face of each man. Reynolds seemed to look back at him. But in fact, his gaze wavered between the general's eyebrows and eyelashes. Only Morton stared back defiantly, his lips tight. The Quran, sir, Morton replied sharply. Verse 8:12. Just one of the more than 100 verses that call Muslims to war with what they call non-believers. And who do they call non-believers, General Brooks asked. Anyone who isn't Muslim, Reynolds interrupted. Quran 551 states that Muslims are not to take Jews and the Christians for friends. Allah describes them as unjust people. The Quran invokes kill the infidel 120 times, General Brooks said quietly, almost to himself. He gazed at the empty sky. What kind of sane nation permits these people to practice such open hatred? Sir Morton said, I thought we were here to discuss Firebird. That's from Savage's new novel, Countdown to Mecca. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other sites. Take a look at it. You won't be disappointed.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
All right, hour number three rolls along. We did all the news of the lying deal with Iran. It says one thing in English, another thing in Obamaese, and yet another thing in the language of Persia. But you bought it hook, line, and stinker because your president went and spoke to a sycophant of the New York Times and sold the deal all over again to a guy who bought the farm a long time ago. I also read from my new novel, which is called Countdown to Mecca, which I kicked it off today by accident. I've had the book. I didn't think it was coming out this fast, but it is. I think it's going to be a real important book because it's a read. It's a novel. It's fun, but it's got politics in it. And I read from that novel, and I gave you all the news. Set in Israel, San Francisco. Set in, where else do I have settings? Let's see. St. Petersburg, Russia. Great scenes in the book. You know, sometimes I meet people who love my show, but they're cheap. They don't buy books. I don't get it. I don't know why they don't go out and buy a book. They don't support the show in any way. They don't go to the website. They don't buy a book. They like the show, but, you know, at least buy something the advertisers sell. You know, 855-400-7282. As they drove back towards Jack's secret apartment in Saul's newest car, a factory armored BMW, "This baby gives new meaning to autoerotic," Doc said admiringly. Jack filled the mobster in on the latest developments while Doc added his own detailed observations and insight. "You think the Mossad killed Schoenberg?" he asked Jack. "Why?" asked Saul. "For helping the Iranians," Doc suggested. "It's something they would do." "The Mossad wouldn't assassinate someone on American soil," Saul decided. "Too risky." Jack shook his head. "2 years ago, I would have agreed with you. But now, is the idea any more outlandish than the Chinese trying to use San Francisco to poison the country or turn the Golden Gate Bridge into ground zero for a dirty bomb?" Saul pressed his lips together. "It's possible," said Jack. "Of course it's possible," Saul complained. "Anything is possible." "Well, there's possible and there's probable. The Mossad killing someone they consider a traitor, that's possible. Radical Muslims trying to destroy this country, that's reality. See the difference? So can you find out what's possible?" Jack pressed. "Maybe." So this is a new character, Saul Minsky, my new character. The reason I wrote about Saul Minsky, a Jewish gangster, as a guy who helps Jack in the novel, is because in World War II, remember we all learned afterwards that the so-called mafia was used as a collaborator with naval intelligence to uncover Nazi infiltration in America? Remember that? Because ships were blown up in New York Harbor. And the naval intelligence went to them and asked them to help who did it, find out who did it. So I said, well, why couldn't that be done today? Why are we relying upon a sorority to save this country? Why are we relying upon moronic frat boys to save the country? When I go to people who really know what it's all about. So I put the character Saul Minsky in there. And I think he's a good character. Saul said, "We're not all no-neck ignoramuses." Minsky was Israeli and Jewish. He spoke fluent Hebrew and Arabic, having grown up in Bethlehem. His father and mother were slaughtered by Arabs in front of his eyes during Sabbath prayers in their little house. Saul was saved at the last minute by a special forces squad of IDF. He was taken to the United States to live with an aunt and uncle in Los Angeles, where he grew up. Rather than becoming just another vicious Jewish lawyer, Saul discovered early on he had a knack for something more dramatic. He liked to fight and kill if need be. He was very much the New Age version of an ancient Israelite. Jack chuckled as his phone rang. It's good writing. I mean, if you like good writing and you like something exciting and you like something tied into your political orientation, check out Countdown to Mecca on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other places, because it'll be out in about a month. And once it's out, you'll see me on some shows here and there. And we'll get some publicity going, and I'm sure that you're going to buy it like you did the other novels. That's all. It's not like, you know, it used to be a saying in San Francisco, about something. They used to say about a bar in San Francisco. Nobody asked, will it make money? It was only a matter of how much money will it make. That was the old joke about San Francisco in the 70s. When someone was going to open a bar, it wasn't, will it make money? It's how much money will it make? So I know the book's going to sell well, but I think it needs very wide dispersal, Countdown to Mecca does. I think it needs to be read by millions of people to understand the message I'm sending out there through this novelistic form. It's another method I'm going to use to get the message out of what's going on and what we're facing and who the enemy really is and how they see us. And so you're going to be quite surprised how the plot turns and twists. And if we didn't have such twisted minds in Hollywood, Abuse of Power would have been a film by now. A Time for War would have been a film. It's better than most of the scripts I've seen out there. But they won't touch it because they hate my politics. So that's it. It's their money. They can do what they want. They're entitled to produce any garbage that they want. And so that's what they do. All right, let's take some callers on various topics. 855-400-7282 is the phone number. Mike online, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Savage. It's a pleasure and an honor to talk to you. Mike from Brooklyn, listening to WABC. I actually had to change my topic. But anyway, I would like to talk about, you're talking about literature now. I would like to say how I think Obama is sort of like, I remember the Canterbury Tales that you read? A lot of kids read about that. And
yes, the Canterbury Tales were required reading when I was in high school, right. I think now Gangbanger Tales is required reading.
Yeah, it's probably banned now. They won't let anybody read that, any kind of.
So what in Canterbury Tales rings a note in your head?
I think that our illustrious president is cuckolding America.
You mean he's cheating on us with another nation?
Yes.
I never looked at it that way. You mean he's going to bed with the mullahs politically?
I think he's going.
Is that the metaphor? Why would he refer to the head Schmendrick over there as the supreme leader? That would be like FDR referring to Hitler as the Führer. Nobody would do that unless they think they're the Führer or the supreme leader. Who ever heard of the supreme leader?
Exactly.
Why would you call a guy a supreme leader unless you agreed with him?
America's being cuckolded by Obama.
All right, you made your point. It's interesting. My neck just went out from it. The neck pain. I found out what was causing the neck pain. I almost needed surgery, but I wouldn't give into it. I tried every trick in the book. And then I used the simple answer. I stopped doing curls. It's terrible. It's a trade-off between whether I want biceps or be crippled. So I said to a doctor friend of mine, I said, I was lifting weights. My arms were looking fantastic. They were hard as a rock again. And my neck was in such pain that I thought I'd faint sometimes if I moved the wrong way. So I said, I stopped doing the curls and my neck feels getting better. He said, when was the last time I looked at your arms? I said, what's the difference? He said, when did I last look at your biceps? He said, what do you care what your biceps look like? No, but you can't have flabby biceps if you're a man, right? That's the last place you want to, like, go. The other thing you expect to happen, whatever, the hair, the other stuff, that we know. But not the arms. I mean, because you can still have strong arms at 90 if you keep it up, the exercise. You need an arm. Everyone needs an arm. As far as a nest on your head with bugs crawling out of it, I don't know, I'm not into that. Better what nature does to us with the hair on the head, that's all. I don't need a nest crawling around with it with a robin inside, with little eggs in the nest. John, Dave on WGDJ Radio. Dave, where is WGDG Radio? Where are you located?
1300 AM, just outside of Albany, New York.
Okay, I'm sorry I didn't know. The screener should put up the city, but what's on your mind?
I was curious. This novel you're talking about has tweaked my interest. Is there a sequence to read your novels? I understand that they're...
No. The first one was called Abuse of Power, Jack Catfield. It was on the list for New York Times list for a number of weeks. The next one was on the list for a couple of weeks. It was called A Time for War. But this is the third and last in the series. And it's really the best plot. It's so original, Countdown to Mecca. And it's so timely. Wouldn't you say it's timely, given the Iranian connection in it?
It absolutely is. So reading this one first would...
Yeah, you can read this one first and go back, and if you like it, you'll buy the first one. Honestly, you don't have to read the first to read the third. It's not like a serial. And I love my characters. I love Minsky, the gangster. Saul Minsky, San Francisco-based gangster. Doc Mattson, former soldier, current Merc, trusted ally of Jack. He's actually a friend of mine who I fictionalized. And then Jack Catfield, he is in every book. But I introduced two new characters. You want to hear something funny? I introduced Sammy Michaels, who's Jack's half-brother, former Marine who's now a professional clown, and a hooker who lives next to him in a luxury apartment building in San Francisco. The original editor of the book said, you got to get rid of the clown and the hooker. I said, why? They're original to the story, to a story. He said, no, I don't like clowns and I don't like prostitutes in the book. I said, but they're germane to the whole plot. I had a fight with them over this. And so I fictionalized both of them, and they really make the book. And then the idea of a Jewish gangster is unique in this day and age, wouldn't you say?
Are they available in the Kindle version for electronic?
Yes, they are. I went onto the website, and there they are. You could buy Kindle, you could buy Schmindle, you could buy a Bindle, you can buy a Bindle in the corner around the corner from you. You could buy a Bindle if you want. A Bindle of Drugs. It's now around, it's late already. It's 17 minutes after the hour. It's hour number 3 of the Savage Nation. When I continue, we'll take calls on, I don't know, people are really calling about the book, Countdown to Mecca. I'm glad. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. So the publisher is rushing the book, Countdown to Mecca, out because it's so pertinent to what's going on with Obama and Iran that they think that I'm a genius. Listen to page 86. Jack pressed on quickly, fearing he might get muscled away, and he said, "Once Iran has a nuclear weapon, it will be used, whether by them or by other Middle Eastern countries who feel that they need the bomb as well, because the Sunnis are not going to allow the Shia to have one. Am I right?" General Brooks nodded noncommittally. His eyes were now fixed on Jack's. "He knows more than he's saying," Jack thought. "There's no evidence that Saudi Arabia or any other country in the Middle East outside of Iran is interested in a weapon." Mel Connors piped up, answering the group in general and Jack in particular. "Well, what about something non-nuclear?" Jack asked. "No one anyone out there who might be interested in trumping the Saddam Hussein or Bashar al-Assad strategy of gassing their own people?" "How do you trump that?" a voice in the group asked. "Weaponized bacteria or viruses," Jack said. "Something launched with a cold delivery system." "A cold delivery system?" Connors said mockingly. "Explosive grout, you mean? It's used in demolition and mining to localize damage." "So far," Jack counted, "but you're avoiding the larger question. The Soviets played around with botulism, smallpox, anthrax, and Ebola," Jack went on. "The Japanese terrorist Aum Shinriko sent people to the Congo during an Ebola outbreak in the 1990s to collect samples." Connors chuckled. Jack thought it had a nervous rattle to it. "You're just looking for a sensational headline," he said. "Actually, sir, what I'm looking for is the truth," Connors replied coolly. "We've been through this mistake in Iraq, and it cost us dearly." "I don't know that there's no evidence," said Jack, keeping his gaze on Brooks. "Another country could obtain uranium much more quickly than Iran did." Connors scoffed. "Now, come on, Jack, you don't understand the science." "Don't have to. I understand robbery." And that's a little bit of an exchange between Jack and someone else in Countdown to Mecca, and it's about Iran, the bomb. Get it? So the publisher's rushing it out to press. It's right now, it's only a month away. God, I didn't know. I thought it was coming out in June. I was way off. And all of these characters are in there. A plane bound for Amman, Jordan goes down in the Caspian Sea. The crash yields no survivors save the hijacker. And a cask containing an agent of unprecedented destructive potential is missing from the wreckage. A carefully plotted terrorist attack has been put into motion, and the resulting chaos might be enough to push America toward another costly war. The one man who might be able to stop the attack is Jack Hatfield, a freelance reporter who has never shied away from controversy. After making a politically incorrect statement about Islamic extremists, he has been discredited as a journalist and left to pick up the pieces of his career. But when his half-brother Sammy calls him saying that his neighbor Anna overheard something she shouldn't have, and now both their lives are in danger, Jack realizes he stumbled upon a conspiracy to destroy Mecca. Now he and a group of like-minded friends on the fringes of the law must uncover who is behind the plot and stop them, or else witness the collapse of the world into a war of mutually assured global destruction. I got chills up the back of my neck. Countdown to Mecca is a gripping page-turner that takes readers on a journey where even the seemingly innocent aren't always innocent. The loyal aren't always loyal, and even those counted on to serve the country cannot always be counted on to protect it. With the threat of a third world war looming, Jack Hatfield must stop the destruction before somebody can stop him. That's a good book, Countdown to Mecca. You know, I feel better reading from the book than reading the news today. You know why? Because it's me. It's from me. It's more, it's what I am. It's what I am. Anyone could read the news and ask you what you think of it and get a, you know, righteously indignant over it. Then start getting excited over Rand Paul tomorrow. I mean, I can't do it anymore, that's all. I'm not that interested in it. I'm supposed to get all worked up over Rand Paul now tomorrow. KSFO Radio, Carl, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I'm just loving the book, you know. And I can't believe that you thought up of that thing about the colonels at the shooting range talking about Muslims.
Yeah, these are the guys plotting to do something. And they're top guys. They're from good families. They're big, high military families. These are not a bunch of nuts. And they come up with a plot to do with Mecca that I can't disclose.
Well, you know what? I bet you there's a lot of people that wish they would have thought of that an idea like that, you know, in like a
well, wait till you see what it is that's in their plot to do in Mecca and how Jack has to stop him. It's pretty good. And it's set in San Francisco, which is the most beautiful city on earth. And I know it like the back of my hand, and I know the sound of the trolleys. I know the sound of the bay. I know the sound of the seals. I know the sound of the birds. I can smell the water. I mean, San Francisco's a palpable part of my existence, and it's all in the novel Countdown to Mecca. Available today, finally, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. When I come back, I want to talk more about Obama's Iran deal, and you'll see what I'm talking about, how what he said in English does not match what the Iranians said in their language. It's all a lie. Wake up and smell the uranium.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
That's all. Iran's statement on nuke deal opposite of Obama's. You see, in the language in which the mullahs, the deceitful, hateful mullahs speak, there's a different statement than what the president claims they agreed to. The official Iranian statement is in Persian. It's 512 words long. The French text is 203 words long. Liar Kerry's text comes in at 1,318 words. But as Greg Richter in Newsmax says, their lengths aren't the only differences. A man who actually reads the language, Amir Tahiri in the New York Post, says that the texts are vague enough to be ultimately meaningless, even as spin. That's your president's text and Kerry's. While the Persian text sounds as though nothing has been agreed to or that Iran has made any concessions whatsoever. Iran's version, all you intelligent billionaires out there, is also labeled a press statement only, while the American version claims that the key points have been decided and agreed to. Can you believe this? The Iranian version uses tricks in verb tense, Tahiri said. Did you know the mullahs speak Persian? When speaking of things Iran is supposed to do, the tense nakara is used. That's a tense. That's something rap stars never learned in school. They speak in one tense, the present. As an example, quote, the nuclear facilities at Fordo shall be developed into a center for nuclear research and advanced physics. Do you have any idea what's actually in the agreement? Do you have any idea what Obama signed? Do you have any idea what the Iranians signed? It's two different agreements. Obama doesn't read any language other than English. That's if he's very good at English. Let's give him that. But there's two separate agreements. Two distinctly separate agreements. One signed by the psychotic throwbacks in Iran, and one signed by Doofus in the White House and his band of merry pranksters, who either are stoned on LSD. It's either the remnants of LSD, magic mushrooms, or antidepressants. Did you actually see what's in it? Do you want to hear what's in it? If you look at what's in it from the point of view of reading what's in it, you'll find out that they agreed to nothing, and this wonderful president of yours agreed to everything. I'm not going to bother reading it to you. You can find it if you really bothered. He gave Iran the bomb. And in people who you would think are intelligent think that he saved the world. His ratings went up over the weekend. Signs a fake deal with Iran. In Persian it says one thing. In English it says another. And 50% of the American people, his ratings went up already. The morons. It just shows you the danger we're in. Iran's Persian statement on deal contradicts Obama's claims. Amir Tahiri, New York Post. He speaks the lingo. See, everything is about language. Kerry is a liar, a known liar. Kerry's been a liar from the day he appeared on the political scene with the medal over the wall. Mr. Swiftboat. He gave us a swiftboating with the Iran deal. He swiftboated America. The American statement claims that Iran has agreed not to use advanced centrifuges, each of which could do the work of 10 old ones. The Iranian text in the Iranian language insist that, quote, on the basis of solutions found, work on advanced centrifuges shall continue on the basis of a 10-year plan. You hear this? I can go down the list. Everything is language. I was having dinner last night after a long, slow Sunday. I told you at my friend's restaurant, Pinocchio, in North Beach with Giovanni and my friend MK. The fact of the matter is, Giovanni speaks many languages. He's not an educated guy. He speaks Spanish to his employees. He speaks Italian to people who come to speak Italian. He speaks Sicilian to those who speak Sicilian. So I asked him something about language. He said there are two different Sicilian dialects. There's Old Sicilian, and then there's Modern Sicilian. I said, I didn't know that. I said, what about the language used in The Godfather? He said, that's Modern Sicilian. He said, there was an interview with Coppola. I'm getting back to the Persian deal. There's an interview with Coppola where when they were discussing which dialect of Sicilian to use with Michael Corleone, he said they have to use the Modern Sicilian because he was born in America. He doesn't know the Old Sicilian language. I said, that's amazing. I said, say two things to me, Old Sicilian and Modern Sicilian. It's so different in tone, right? So everything is about language. What is it? Obama doesn't know that in Persian there are different tenses that have different meanings than that signed by him and his Girl Scouts? What is he, that dumb or what? Or is he just throwing it away? I mean, you got to ask yourself. That's all. Iran's Persian statement on deal contradicts Obama's claims. But trying to tell this to I hate to use the word liberals. They're not liberals. They're dummies. It proves the adage that you can make a lot of money and be a moron. If it's anything I've learned in my life after Mayor Bloomberg, it's that you can make billions and be an idiot. That's the one thing I've learned. You can make billions and be a big dummy with the sodas. That was his big problem, is a soda. That was his biggest problem in the world, the size of the soda you were drinking. Did you get it? So, in other words, Obama and Kerry and his Girl Scouts sold the people a bill of goods in his Thursday Rose Garden ceremony marking the Iran deal. Lied about everything. The Iranians said another thing in their own language. That's all. I made the point. So now it's a wait-and-see situation. Then Feinstein over the weekend backs the mullahs and attacks Israel. The most dangerous senator in American history. The most duplicitous senator in American history. I would say the most corrupt, but I've only read that in newspapers, and no one seems to be able to nail her for it. They always say about her husband, Blum, and he's made deals based upon her feeding contracts. And she's been enriched while she's in office. I can't confirm any of that, of course. That's mere allegations. Why should we assume that Dianne Feinstein would be so low as to do things like that? Or that she's enriched herself while in office? How could you say that? Just because her wealth has gone up about 100 times since she became senator. But it's gone up with inflation. It's like COLA, like a cost of living raise. Instead of 1% a year, 1.6% a year over the time she was senator, it's about 1.6% a day, roughly, since she became senator. And Boxer, too, another great liberal. Take a look at what she was worth when she started and what her and hubby Sue are now worth. See how that happened. Nothing to do with her. Her office, of course. These women are so in it for the public service and the public good. That's the main thing. Now, there's a lot more. I could do the normal stuff, the run-of-the-mill, the Rolling Stone rape article. But, I mean, what can I say to you? You believe anything that Jan Wenner ever published? Since when did they become a valid publication? I don't understand it. How many other men's lives have been ruined by false rape accusations? First of all, the reporter should go to prison. That's number one. I read that the Rolling Stoner is being sued by the fraternity. And I hope they take him for everything he's worth. Every beach house, every pair of shoes. They take that magazine for everything it's worth, for what they did to people. They didn't even file the you-know-what who published the false articles, Rolling Stone. But false rape accusations are very common, as you well know. They're a serious problem, as you well know. And as you well know, men's lives have been ruined by false rape accusations, as you well know. Doesn't matter, Rolling Stone retracted UVA rape story. It's a little too late for that. Lives have been ruined. Fraternities have been ruined. And the cowards who run the colleges should be fired for what they've done to these campuses. And that's leading me right into the lead story of today. It says, Mindy Kaling's brother pretended to be black to get into medical school. I don't know who Mindy Kaling is. Apparently she's an actress. But it says, the big brother of Fox sitcom star Mindy Kaling, they're Indian, East Indian, reveals that he got into medical school by pretending to be African American. 15 years ago, Vijay Chakalingam shaved off his straight black hair, trimmed what he calls his long Indian eyelashes, and started checking off the black box for race on his med school applications. Before long, the Asian Indian American was interviewing at Harvard and Columbia and found himself on wait lists
at the University of Pennsylvania, Washington U, and Mount Sinai. Despite his relatively mediocre 3.1 GPA and his family's considerable wealth. Are you listening to this? Are you listening carefully? Are you listening carefully to what affirmative action has wrought in this nation? Because I'm leading up to a major league point here. So here is an East Indian who started to change his association from Asian, where Asian, East Asian, to black. And the minute he said he was black and started checking off black, with the very same GPA, the very same GPA, and the very same wealthy family, they ran after him. Ran after him, the schmucks who run the universities. Ran after him. Oh, we need you because you're African American. We don't need any more of those nasty Asian Indian Americans. So they ran after him. And here's what he says. He said, he plans to write a memoir about his experiences to be entitled Almost Black. He said, I got into medical school because I said I was black, Choka Lingam writes in his blog at almostblack.com. Quote, the funny thing is I'm not. My plan actually worked. Lucky for you, he said, I never became a doctor. How do you like that? I mean, those are harsh words. A man who pretended to be black to get into medical school. He shaved off his straight black hair and his mustache. Choka Lingam said he came up with the idea of self-identifying as black after seeing fellow Asian Indian Americans with better grades than he had to struggle to get into medical school. He says, I disclosed that I grew up in one of the wealthiest towns in Massachusetts, that my mother was a doctor, and that my father was an architect, describing his med school applications. I disclosed that I didn't receive financial aid from the University of Chicago, and that I had a nice car. I was the campus rich kid. Let's just put it on the table. And yet the medical schools considered me an affirmative action applicant. On affirmative action in general, Choka Lingam said, racism is not the answer. It also promotes negative stereotypes about the competency of minority Americans by making it seem like they need special treatment. Would anyone listening to this show argue with me that Obama was not advanced because of affirmative action? Is there anyone listening to this show who could definitively prove to me that he was advanced because of his great intellect and his great mentality? You know it's a lie. You've never seen his records, have you? No one's ever seen his college records. And you know he was handpicked and shuffled along and pushed forward. You know that, don't you? And take a look at what this man is doing to the world. Take a look at what he's done to the world. So medical school is one thing, but now you have a man pushed along way out of his league who's pretending to be president, and everything he touches blows up in front of our faces. That's all. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from.
What you might hear from Prime Minister Netanyahu, which I respect, is the notion, look, Israel's more vulnerable. We don't have the luxury of testing these propositions the way you do. And I completely understand that. And further, I
right,
completely
turn him
understand.
On. Really, I can't listen to this academic anymore. He lives in another world. The man's living in his own, drinking his own Kool-Aid. It's like Chamberlain believing Herr Hitler wanted peace. They gave him what he wanted, and then he invaded Poland. I mean, it's the same exact thing. This man is a repeat of history, and those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it. There is a war right now. It's a world war. They have declared war on us. It's been on for about 1,000 years. They're all over the place, including the women in Queens, New York. Wherever you turn, there's another one being brought in about to blow up this and blow up that and the jihad this and ISIS that. Except the president doesn't even want to define it as a war, nor will he say Islam in relationship to the war. So how can you trust anything that this man is doing? He's not living in reality. He's got a warped vision. He's an appeaser. He wants to give the Iranians what they want just to shut them up for now and push the ball down the court. It is a world war, and they're on the side of wanting to kill and win at all costs. And Obama says that the outline is a good deal. It's going to make the world safer. Most people who know history know that's not true. Rich on KSFO, go ahead, please. Have your day in court. Make your statement.
Since most experts, left, right, and center, absolutely fundamentally disagree with your prognostications regarding...
Wait, what do you mean most experts? You, hold it. Hey, listen, I don't know who you are from a hole in a barn. No, it's not most experts. It's the few left-wing wackos like yourself.
So is it your...
It's appeasers like you who would have done a deal with Hitler. That's who agrees with Obama.
Is it
where do you come up with this most experts? This is like saying the science is in on global warming. You guys really have a lot of gall. Suddenly the whole world agrees with you.
It's pretty easy to get informed, Mike. You just Google
experts. All right, don't give me the Google again and look up the internet. You're actually an unknown individual. Has nothing to do with this time, so you call a show trying to test yourself against me. But you're out of your league, my friend. Everybody understands that this man is an appeaser and a liar, except you. You're one of the few who doesn't understand it. You, along with the New York Times and a few other left-wing publications.
You say everybody.
All right, have a nice day. The war is on. It's a world war. One of the finest columnists in the country is Michael Goodwin of the New York Post. He was on the show last week. And I'm sure he can Google appeaser. Google appeaser, if you don't mind. You have nothing to do there in your apartment. And he said, Obama's goal of bringing Iran in from the cold is, like much of his presidency, a vision divorced from reality. His hollow rhetoric echoes the appeasers who sought to stop Hitler in 1939 by giving him what he wanted. The Second World War and its aftermath confronted the West with two existential challenges. First came Nazism and fascism, followed by communism. We prevailed because our leaders saw the enemies for what they were and resolved to defeat them. Many in the West, including some Americans, such as Rich from KSFO, drink the Kool-Aid, the same Kool-Aid that Herr Hitler wanted peace. When he invaded Poland, many insisted we could sit out the war. But thankfully, Roosevelt and Churchill knew otherwise. And he goes on. And many people understand that Ronald Reagan and the Pope, John Paul II, saw communism for what it was. And they fought it. And they had the wisdom and compassion to make the world safe for democracy, which eventually, by the way, took root all over the world. People were liberated. And we had a golden age of peace and prosperity marked the 70 years since World War II, especially the last 25 years. But he said the era ended officially on 9/11 when the Muslims brought war to America, just as Pearl Harbor ended the fiction that fascism was somebody else's problem. But he said, unlike our earlier leaders, Obama wants peace at any price. His refusal even to call the enemy by its name reflects a willful blindness to an ideology that has declared war on us. Well, that's it for today's show. Again, I launched my new novel, Countdown to Mecca. If you want real fiction, check it out. Countdown to Mecca. It's up on michaelsavage.com and at Amazon.
Savage.